806 FM Talk 106.5 and continuing Super Tuesday coverage as we get into the, what is it, plus one, plus hour six since we closed the polls. Mm-hmm. Now, you said you're right. I mean, if people were still in line, they kept them open for a little bit. But, you know, still looking at 1% reporting out there. We've talked a bunch about AL1 and a little bit about AL2. I want to talk some AL5 and the state, you know, look around the state, look at the Senate race as it shapes up in North Alabama. Also, look at AL5 because we're checking in with our buddy Jeff Poor. He's breaking free at WVNN to talk to us right here at FM Talk 106.5. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
Hey, good, man. So what do y'all know up there that we don't know yet? Are you getting any more information? We're looking at just like 1% reporting.
Notoriously slow in Madison County coming in, as tends to be the bigger places. Some boxes reporting from Limestone County, Lauderdale County. Jeff Sessions very early in some of these boxes up here this way. Not too much of a surprise over in Florence. That seems to be where he would be strong. But it's slow coming in. But just looking at the state right now, down y'all's way, looking strong for Bradley Byrd. Coming in the rural parts of the state, strong for Tuberville, and as you might imagine, where we expected him to do well, Jeff Sessions doing well in the bigger cities.
Okay, so I know a lot of us have been talking for a whole long time that we're looking at runoff scenarios here. The runoff scenario for the Republican primary for Senate is, you know, I heard our buddy Sean Ross earlier said he felt Tuberville was the more sure thing in a runoff than Sessions. I thought that was an interesting take.
I agree. Well,
do you
Tuberville support?
If you had to bet, okay, right? If you had to bet straight up, who would end up in the runoff in this Republican Senate primary? Would it be Sessions or Tuberville? You could only pick one name. Who would you pick?
Let's say there's $1 million involved.
Yes,
I think Tuberville is a lock with Sessions and Byrd being in the same lane.
Wow,
that would make me a little nervous. So, but I feel like Sessions has a very wide geographic, very geographically diverse support. It's not coming from one place or another. That seems to be where I could see that philosophy. I'm not sure that I necessarily agree with that, but maybe, yeah, maybe Sessions is Tommy Tuberville's a better fit for that runner, at least that runner up or better.
You know, we've talked about this a bunch, that Bradley Byrd has got to really overperform down here in South Alabama to put himself in the mix for this runoff. Does Sessions have to do the same, or can Sessions, because of that name ID and the statewide appeal, can he lose here in South Alabama and still be the other name in the runoff?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's think about this. So if it is a Bradley Byrd, Tommy Tuberville, or a Jeff Sessions, Tommy Tuberville runoff, Mobile is suddenly unified
mm-hmm.
for one of those two candidates, right? And guess what? Those candidates will have the advantage of their hometown probably likely having a AL1 runoff as well. So that's a problem. I mean, that's why, you know, you got to look at Tommy Tuberville. Sure, he's doing well, but is Tommy Tuberville a Bradley Byrd or Jeff Sessions voter's second choice, or does it go the other way?
Yeah, one of the things I've been looking at is who would have a better chance against Tuberville in the runoff, and somebody would say, well, whoever comes in second would, but I don't know that it's that simple. I think as people go to a second choice, right, that's what a lot of times the majority of people in a runoff are going to voters. If they come back and their person didn't win, they're in the second choice mode, and I wonder if that doesn't favor Sessions as a second choice mode.
You know, and I think there's something to that. I do. You know, people decided early on, perhaps, that Tommy Tuberville or Bradley Byrd was their guy before Sessions was in, and they stuck with that. And here comes Jeff Sessions. Well, yeah, I like Jeff Sessions, but he is not—he's not my first choice. You know,
right?
I already committed to these guys, and if your guy's out of it, then is Tommy Tuberville your second choice, or is Jeff Sessions or Bradley Byrd? You know, like that—that seems to be a
I don't see. Yeah, I don't.
idea.
Yeah, I don't see Tuberville, and text line's open, phone line's open for y'all as well, but I don't see Tuberville as a second choice. I see people going in as first choice, they're all in, but I don't see somebody who had gone and voted for, you know, pick another candidate here, and their candidate's not in, that they're gonna turn around and vote for Tuberville. I think Tuberville's support is all going to be displayed in this first vote tonight.
Well, you know, there's also the Tuberville, maybe so, but is if your candidate's not in it, and you are a Joe Sessions or Bradley Byrd guy, are you going to even show up to vote? And also,
no, but if you do show up to vote, if you're, you know, if you're a Byrne supporter and Sessions is in, or your Sessions supporter and Byrne's in the runoff, you're going to vote for the. I don't think you're going to. I think Tuberville's full support is expressed tonight.
But I don't know that. I don't know that the second choice people show up to vote. You know, you had your heart set on something, and you had your heart set on pistachio ice cream, and you get chocolate instead, or you get there and you got strawberry and chocolate, and you know, are you still going to go in and get the ice cream or whatever? I don't know. Are you going to sit this one out? That's something to think about, because I got to tell you, Sean, I think that March 31st runoff isn't going to be a huge turnout like we see tonight.
All right, we'll watch this some more and get more information. I imagine by the end of this hour, we'll have a little better sense of what's trending in Alabama, and we'll check with you again tonight. Thanks, Jeff, for your time.
Hey, Sean, thanks for having me on. Hopefully we can check up again.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff Poore checking in from the north end of the state, where they're watching some of the same races we are, but they're also eyes on AL5. We'll update some of the vote counts as they have been moving here as we come back. And also we'll take you to Fairhope, check in with Robert Kennedy Jr. and the County Gardner Watch Party going on over there. What about the Democrats? How are the numbers looking there as the precincts come in? We'll talk about that. 8:15 FM Talk 106.5 and continuing Super Tuesday coverage brought to you by the Craig Smith Agency. Big thank you to Craig Smith. And we're doing this throughout the night, getting the information in as it comes in on this Super Tuesday. We have folks all over that. We have folks in North Alabama, East Alabama, West Alabama. Most importantly, we got our folks in South Alabama. And our friend Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama on Friday nights. Check it in now. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Sean, Dalton, how you guys doing tonight?
We're great,
doing good. We're sedentary as you are, touring around here, going to watch parties, and it's got to be interesting. Somebody who has been in the running before, that has run a campaign before, for you to watch this as a non-participant and a spectator, what's that like tonight? Is there any kind of bittersweet moments for you?
There are absolutely no bittersweet moments, and I have to tell you that I am extremely relaxed compared to how I would have been during my time as a candidate with my name on the ballot. But it's been a lot of fun. We're out here at the Fairhope Brewing Company at the Keani Gardner for Congress Watch Party, and we have a really enthusiastic crowd that's here. They're all very supportive of Keani. She's not actually here right now. She's been doing her thing over on the Mobile side and is trying to make her way back over now.
Yeah, what is that like? I mean, as you did this, so I mean, we're first-hand experience. Do you try to you figure out where you're going to end up for your watch party, but you're trying to hit all the other places and thank people first, or how do you work that?
Well, I think my situation was a little unique because there was a lot of visibility around that U.S. Senate special election. So I had my watch party over at the Admiral, and the press was there, you know, because at that point, if you recall, I was polling very strong in a competitive position with Doug Jones. But here is a little different. All the folks that we know are folks that we've seen before, primarily out of the Baldwin County circles, as you would expect, since that is where Dr. Gardner lives. But there is a lot of energy here. You know, we have the results up on one television. We have basketball up on the other television, and folks are feeling real good and just waiting to give her a rousing welcome when she arrives.
Why don't we get your perspective, and we'll delve back into state things in a second, but your perspective on Joe Biden. And I plan to talk to you about this on Thursday, but I get a chance to talk to you tonight. I know you are a big supporter of Senator Klobuchar, so she's out, throws her support behind Biden, as does Buttigieg. What's your thought here? Is this the coalescing of the moderates you thought needed to happen, or what's your take?
Yeah, so if we go back to the first time that you and I discussed this issue after the Iowa caucuses, all the focus was on Bernie Sanders, with him, his performance. I actually think we had this conversation after New Hampshire, if I'm sure correctly. And what we identified was that if you added up all of the moderate numbers, and the three moderates we were talking about were Vice President Biden, Senator Klobuchar, and Mayor Pete, that the numbers were actually larger than the two most progressive senators, being Warren and Senator Sanders. So with those two, Senator Klobuchar and Mayor Pete, having dropped out, you know, immediately after South Carolina, it set the stage for possible consolidation, but to actually see it happening mathematically is really kind of fascinating to watch.
Yeah, I wonder if this is true, that there's a lot better chance of coalescing among moderates than it would be folks in the, you know, that be to the right or to the left. It seems like the personalities may be more made for compromise and coalescing amongst moderates. Or do you think that's right?
No, I think you've hit that square in the center of the target. And one of the things that you have to add on to that, you can actually hear it in Vice President Biden's language, having talked to Mayor Pete, in the sense that with him and Senator Klobuchar, there would be a role for them in a Biden administration. So it's almost like he's trying to pick up the team members. You haven't heard that same language from Senator Sanders, at least at this point in the conversation.
Right.
To the hypothesis that you just articulated, that consolidation will probably happen quicker on the moderate end of the continuum than it would on the progressive side.
And that leads me right into what I was going to ask you, Robert. The timing of Klobuchar and Buttigieg getting out of the race obviously couldn't have been better for Biden. So what kind of deal might have been out there on the table for them? Or did they truly just take one for the team and saw that they likely weren't going to win the nomination and coalesce behind the moderate? Do you think one of them might be getting the vice president gig if Biden wins?
I have always said, at least in my non-public conversations, that I thought Senator Klobuchar would be a very strong contender for the ticket, along with a number of others. I am less enthusiastic about the prospect right now of Mayor Pete on the ticket. It just seems early to me. It feels like he needs another cycle or two. But in terms of a cabinet post, yes, I could see him definitely being somebody who is, if you think of what President Trump did, when he picked up people like Secretary Perry or Secretary Carson, you kind of see where there may be potential roles for the two of them. I don't think any deals have been cut at this stage, because I don't think that Vice President Biden would have needed to make that offer. But be that as it may, I do think that it is set up for them coming out later on once he wins the nomination, if he in fact ends up being the nominee, where you can see that those are two of the individuals that he would look at.
Now, you don't think we're, but we're not in running mate territory here. We're cabinet position, right? I mean,
it's all
okay. What about the other factor here? And I don't know, as we look at the votes coming in, let's get the latest here for Bloomberg 14. Now, this is only 2% precincts reporting. Bloomberg with 14% of the vote, actually tying Bernie Sanders in Alabama. I don't know how much that cost him per vote. We could probably do the math on it. But Bloomberg, where does he fall in that continuum? Because is he a moderate, but is he a different kind of moderate? Is he somebody, because he came in because he basically had a vote of no confidence in Biden, right? I mean, that's what I heard.
Right. And so if we go back to something that you and I have talked about philosophically, if we took the labels off and just kind of understood where people sat on the issues, if you have someone like the mayor, who was previously a Republican, who became an independent, who ultimately became a Democrat, if you didn't have any of those labels, you would say he is a moderate, probably a pragmatic manager. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where you'd approach it. His challenge is on the authenticity metric, and that's given by the fact that he has been willing to change those labels. So from the issue of him actually executing policy, I think he will be defined as a moderate, either center-left with the Democratic label or center-right with the Republican label. But it's that authenticity that I think is really going to prevent him from going far, at least at this point in this particular presidential cycle. Now, if, for example, he had entered the race earlier, like the other people did, then I think he could have done some damage. But I really think that this is really too early to play.
Yeah, he talks about he's going to keep on pushing through and all that. But, I mean, a lot being decided today with 14 states in Super Tuesday. And I don't know that there, maybe there is, but it seems like what I'm seeing right now, this lead that Biden's pulling out doesn't leave much room for growth for a Bloomberg, that center left or moderate, if they call it.
I really don't think so, unless something comes out in the vice president's history that is a, you know, you're talking about someone who's been vetted for 30 plus years. But it's really that proverbial, quote, October surprise, end quote, would be the type of thing that would knock him off. But, you know, unless somebody's coming up with a tape, something they have somewhere, some video, I think it's going to be problematic for Mayor Bloomberg this time.
Speaking of surprises, Biden's number one competitor right now, Bernie Sanders, I've seen more video lately of him saying some pretty far-left things, whether it's about the Soviet Union or other things that Sanders has represented in his past. Do you think maybe the Biden campaign is waiting to put out more damaging information on Sanders by any chance?
I actually don't think that's part of their plan currently. But as we've talked about both on air and off air, if you're having an academic conversation about somebody who is a known dictator, it's one thing to do that from an academic perspective in a classroom. Well, for a person who's been a sitting senator for this number of years, for them to do that publicly communicates a lack of political savvy that you would not expect a candidate at that level to have at this point in his career.
Talk about what you'll hear national news talk about a bunch. And if everybody's got to identify before I ask this question, I find this stuff silly, but we'll all identify if y'all are just tuning in. So Dalton and I are we're white dudes,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Robert Kennedy Jr. is a black man. So I hate this stuff, but we'll identify that way if somebody listening here before we ask the question. Because national news seems like it's the Biden decision is based on the fact that African Americans in this country are supporting Biden, and they almost lead it to say because he was President Obama's VP. From your singular perspective as Robert Kennedy Jr., how does that sit with you?
It actually doesn't sit anywhere, right? It's just a comment that pundits tend to make.
I just keep hearing it, and I go, is that really that simple? Is it that simplistic? I just don't buy that.
So it's the same thing when you and I have talked about my personal issues with Bloomberg.
And I have a little trouble hearing you, too. I don't know if the phones slip back or... You there?
Hey, can you hear me now?
A little bit better, but... But something was going on. I don't know. You may.
So this is like
there you go.
Like that commercial.
Yes. Yeah. You're a lot better now.
Out of the car.
Sounds
right.
Good.
Okay. So this is when I talk about the issues that I had personally with Bloomberg.
Right.
Is having experience on the other end, stop and frisk, under the umbrella of what we refer to as driving while black.
DWB.
And
yeah.
Yes, driving while black, and then, of course, being on the streets of New York and being stopped. No one ever touched me, but I have been stopped and challenged by the police. And so it gets to this issue of authenticity once again, right? And so we put that under the umbrella of a potential racial label, and I understand that there are people on both sides of the issue who will say, due to the crime statistics in New York City, that there was an argument for putting aggressive policing practices in those communities. Mm-hmm. But as a person who was on the other end of that, again, for an apology to come proximate to a declaration for political office, it's completely different if he had apologized 7-8 years ago. And so when you take that and you compare it to somebody like Vice President Biden and him having a long history with the community, it actually, he gets a stamp from President Obama because he chose Joe Biden as the vice president. But again, the average person in my community isn't doing it for that reason. It's because his history with the community has extended over long periods of time, and him being chosen by Barack Obama was just icing on the cake.
Okay, so it, as I always guess, it's a little more, there's a little more depth to it than maybe the cable news channels make it out to be.
Well, this gets into a larger issue about how, let's call it the mainstream media, for lack of a better term, has a tendency to discuss issues within the African-American community, right? So there's this tendency to want to put us all in one pot and describe us as a monolith, when we know that that is simply not the case. It's just, it's easier for people who don't want to do the hard work, you know, folks like you and I do, when we start to debate these issues. But in terms of someone being offended because somebody makes that association with President Obama and using that as one of a number of reasons why the community is more comfortable with Joe Biden than they are with Mike Bloomberg, for example, that's not something that anyone in my circles would take offense.
All right. Let's talk, as you are at the County Gardner's party there in Fairhope, let's talk about the AL1 race on the Democrat side. It seems like there's a – Everhart has – now 1% of precincts or what? You have more
updates? Yeah, I got an update on the on that side, and it looks like with 3% reporting.
Okay, down 3%.
3%, yeah. So still very, very low. But Everhart currently in the lead with 71% of the vote.
Wow.
And Collins and Gardner very close at right around 14%.
Wow.
Okay.
I know this 3%, but that's big.
Yeah, it's big. Like you alluded to before, it's still early, right? And so as we get a little bit deeper into the evening, we'll leave here and we'll head over in the direction of Dr. Everhart's party as well. We'll have to talk a little bit about the demographics of the race, because that actually comes into play. For those of you who may not know, the Democratic electorate in the state of Alabama is between 60 and 70% African American. Right, so you actually start with those demographics.
Right.
And in my primary election that I had during the 2018 cycle, my competitor was also African American. So there was no racial dynamic among us, albeit there may have been a gender one. But now you have a racial dynamic that's integrated here as well, and you may see some of those patterns start to materialize. But again, We'll know a little bit more as to whether or not that is the case as we get deeper into the night.
All right. Very good. We're going to check back with you and talk with you later in the evening when we have more than 3% of reporting in on the precincts and we have a little better sense of what's happening out there. Robert, as always, I appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, you be good, guys.
All right, we'll be checking back in with Robert Kennedy Jr. in just a little bit as he's traveling around watch parties here for the AL1 Democrat primary.
And we've got some updates with 3% reporting in the ALGOP Senate primary. Tuberville with 38% of the vote. Jeff Sessions, 32% of
the vote. That's dropped. Now that's dropped again.
And Bradley Byrne with 19%. Roy Moore, 7.7%. And in AL1, the GOP primary, Jerry Carl with 45% of the vote, 3% in. Jerry Carl has 45% of the vote. Bill Hightower, 29%. Chris Pringle, 18%.
There's a story developing. There's a story developing right there in the AL1 Republican primary. All right, more on this when we get back. Also, your calls and texts at 343-0106. It's election night coverage right here on FM Talk 106.5. Right, Super Tuesday election night coverage brought to you by the Craig Smith Agency right here on FM Talk 106.5. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig. Big thank you to Robert Kennedy Jr. We'll be checking in with him when you call 343-0106. You're talking to Philip. He is here. We got a crew here tonight. I had a little Mexican food to start off the evening here, and enjoying that, and talking votes here in Alabama, and also around the country as 14 states involved today in Super Tuesday. There's some real stories coming out here, and it's mostly in the Democrat Republicans or Democrat presidential stakes.
Yeah. So tonight, with the 14 states, and don't forget American Samoa,
not to be forgotten,
also on the line. That's 1,344 delegates tonight on the line, which is about one third of the total delegates in the entire nation. So a lot on the line tonight. And so far, it looks like the plan for Klobuchar and Buttigieg to step out of the race and endorse Biden is working well for Biden. So far, I've got him with five states called for Biden tonight. Virginia was the first to be called for Biden. And then we heard that North Carolina was going Biden's way. And then with only 1% of the vote, here in Alabama, they went ahead and called the race for Biden here, too. And then since then, Oklahoma has come in for Biden, and also Tennessee, the latest to be called for the former vice president. For Sanders, so far, he's picked up two states, Vermont, his home state, of course, that was expected, and also Colorado. Bernie Sanders has won
they have
Colorado.
Given they what have was given the, him what Colorado. Was it, what, do you know what the percentages were there?
I don't have the percentages on hand.
Because that one's interesting to me, I guess, with Tom Steyer getting out. And you know, I've said this about Colorado. It is a purple state, but I think it's – we talk about some purple states okay. that are this kind of even mix of Republicans and Democrats. Colorado is one of those places that is an even mix versus – you look like Illinois somewhere. There's a blue state, but it has big, big red areas in it and big, big blue areas in it, where Colorado seems to be a little more even. That's why it's surprising to me that Bernie Sanders would win there.
Yeah, and here's the numbers for Colorado. They have 39% of the vote in, and this is a surprise. So you have Bernie in first in Colorado. He's got 36% of the vote. They've obviously already called it for Bernie. But second place in Colorado, Michael Bloomberg. So his money worked somewhere. Maybe it didn't get him to win in Colorado, but he's got 24% of the vote there, followed okay. by Biden with 20%, Elizabeth Warren with 16.7%, and then the next closest is Tulsi Gabbard with 1.19% of the vote in Colorado. And also they said that with Texas, if it continues at this rate, Biden and Sanders will have both reached the amount of votes needed to at least have delegates. So regardless of who wins, they'll both be getting delegates from Texas, but right now that race is too close to call.
Okay, but let's back up here for a second, and we talk about the Bloomberg spending.
Mm-hmm.
He has how many delegates now?
He, by my last count, or at least according to this site that I'm looking at here, he has one delegate. And I thought this was funny. There was a quote on Wall Street Journal earlier that had Bloomberg saying, "We have done something no one else thought possible." And I was thinking, yeah, you spent more money than anyone,
right?
And you're not winning a thing. That no one thought that was possible, that you could spend that much money and receive the amount of votes that it appears he's getting tonight on Super Tuesday. To put it in perspective, so Biden won Virginia pretty handily, and Bloomberg outspent Biden 50-1 in Virginia alone.
Outspent 50-1. That's more than the ratio, if y'all remember, that Luther Strange outspent Roy Moore. I think it was 28-1. So 50-1.
50-1. And earlier in the night, when there had only been four states called, a couple to Sanders and a couple to Biden, they put out a story. Bloomberg spent $33.7 million in ads in the four states that had been called for his opponent at that time. So, you know, right now we've got seven states that have been called for Biden or Sanders. How much money did Bloomberg put in total into those seven states and not come out with delegates? We'll have to see. But, I mean, that's a lot of money to not be getting any wins tonight.
Wow. Wow. At what point when you're spending that kind of money, even if you got it, I know he's got it piled up. It's mm-hmm. Bloomberg. But Steyer had it piled up, and he found the time to say, okay, enough's enough.
I don't know. I obviously don't have any experience spending that kind of money. So if you put it in perspective,
it's
almost
like Brewster's Millions.
Take whatever your annual income is or how much money you have stacked up, and then look at Bloomberg and how much money he has and how much he spent on this election. I guess if you make it apples to apples, I don't know if it'd be like me spending like $10-$15 to get elected compared to my annual income, or if it'd be more than that.
It'd be a lot more than that. I think it'd be equivalent of one of us spending $250,000, you know?
It's insane.
Yeah.
And he obviously thought this plan was going to work out much, much better than it did.
You know, I mentioned it with Robert talking a second ago. So one of the stories is, so the early financier for Joe Biden was Michael Bloomberg.
Right.
Okay. Early on, Biden wasn't looking that good. That's when Bloomberg announced he was in.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically had a vote of no confidence, took his money, and backed himself versus backing Biden. So think about that, too, that relationship. The person that was the main financier for Joe Biden and getting people together and packaging money, right? said, ah, you're no good. I can do this better on my own, and I'm going to get in the race. So the person who's backing you, think about that. You're running for an office. The person that's, you know, helping you here and raise money here and there, they end up having a vote of no confidence to the point that they get in to run. Because you can't do it. I'll show you how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
It's
embarrassing.
It is embarrassing. But Joe Biden, I think, has got the smile on his face right now.
I'm sure.
Maybe because he doesn't know where he is, but I mean, mm-hmm. Joe Biden has the smile on his face right now.
And I have a feeling he won't be offering Bloomberg any positions in the in his cabinet if he were to become the
Bloomberg
candidate.
Where do those Bloomberg voters, if you're a Bloomberg voter, I'd love to hear from you tonight, because I have yet to talk to a Bloomberg voter.
They're out there.
I know, but I have not had, I've had people that Bernie Sanders fans talk to me, I've had Joe Biden fans talk to me, Pete Buttigieg fans, no Elizabeth Warren. I haven't heard from anybody who's Elizabeth Warren, and heard from no one who's a Michael Bloomberg voter. If you're a Bloomberg voter, if Bloomberg is not going to be is not going to win this thing,
mm-hmm.
do you back Biden?
I think they're much more likely to back Biden than Sanders. I think the question is, if you're a Bloomberg voter, are you more likely to back Biden or Trump in the general election?
Well,
is that a question that should be asked?
Who are the Bloomberg voters? I really don't. This is not rhetorical. I'd love to hear from you if you're a Bloomberg voter. I just don't know that I can't even paint a picture of who the Bloomberg voter is. That there's somebody what is the dissatisfaction with Biden if you're a Democrat that has you shift to Bloomberg? I really, that is something I'd like to know.
Yeah, maybe some of the stuff regarding his son and Ukraine, maybe that was enough to turn people off of Biden and think that it would be a bad idea to vote for him.
But that seems like it would switch people to far away from the whole lot of them, and maybe switch them to a Warren or a Sanders even.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't have an answer to that. I do know that more precincts are coming in, so we've got some updates coming up on the Senate race, AL1, AL2, and the Democrat presidential primary.
All right, that's all coming up in just a second. And turnout not really strong today, so is that favoring some of the candidates? Like, what's Roy Moore doing? We'll look at that when we get back. Forty-seven on this Super Tuesday. Continuing coverage of election night here on FM Talk 106.5, brought to you by the Craig Smith Agency. We're checking with our buddy John Sharp from AL.com in just a second. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig. Dalton, you're pulling some new numbers in right now. So we've got some more, 8% of precincts reporting?
9% now.
Ooh.
For the U.S. Senate race.
Yeah.
And we're looking at Tommy Tuberville with, again, 9% reporting. Tommy Tuberville has 36.6% of the vote. Jeff Sessions with 32.5% of
wow.
the vote.
Wow.
Bradley Byrne with 20% of the vote, and then Roy Moore, a distant fourth, 8.2% of the vote for Senate. Looking at AL1, 4% of the votes are in, and Jerry Carl with the lead, 41.2%. Bill Hightower right behind him at 36%, and Chris Pringle, a distant third, at 17.6% for AL1, the GOP race. In the Democratic race for AL1 in the primary, Averhart, with 4% of the votes in, James Averhart, leads with 47.6%, Keani Gardner with 37.7%.
Okay, now so that's changed a bunch since earlier.
That changed big time, because Keani Gardner was around 14% with 1% of the votes in. She's now jumped up to 37.7%, and Rick Collins currently sitting in third at 14.7%. And looking at State Amendment 1, which has been a big topic of discussion here over the last few months, with 8% of the precincts reporting, the no votes with 76%. So 8% of precincts have reported this is State Amendment 1, and no getting 76%, which would mean things would stay the same.
Right.
The governor would not appoint members to the board.
Can you be searching here for where we are with that place one Trump delegate between Jim Ziegler and Kay Ivey?
I need to find that. And one last update here for District 2 Republican primary.
Yeah, so is Coleman still leading?
And this, we've got 14% in, so a pretty big number here. Coleman is leading with 44% of the vote, Jessica Taylor with 18% of the vote, Barry Moore 17%, and Troy King with 13%.
Okay, so Troy King stayed at the same number he was with like 1% in.
Yeah, and so those are the latest numbers we have here for some of the bigger races that we're looking at.
All right, good stuff. Thank you for the update. Let's take you live to the Sessions watch party where we find our buddy John Sharp from AL.com. Hey, John.
Hey, Sean. How you doing this evening?
Doing good, man. Let's. You heard some of those numbers Dalton just went through. So we got Tuberville right now with 9% reporting.
Yep.
Tuberville leading Sessions by 7 percentage points here?
5%.
Now. 5 percentage points here.
That's correct.
Are you surprised?
Not completely. I knew this would be a two-person race going into this here. I think the outcome is kind of what we're thinking, Sessions-Tuberville. I think you would have flipped the two, though. I think I think most people have predicted Sessions leading Tuberville by 5 percentage points.
Yep.
But it's still early. It's very early still. I mean, we're not even, a quarter of the way through the precincts reporting yet. So we got to wait to see how this all shakes out before we start jumping to conclusions.
No, and I'm not – it's just right now that's the situation. What I have watched, though, is a percentage for Bradley Byrne increasing. And it's funny, the same kind of way if you look at today or you look at 7 o'clock on as analogous to what this whole campaign has been, you know, Byrne has finished strong here in this race. I mean, he's hit on the cylinders here at the end, and maybe that's going to be reflected in the way the polling comes in tonight.
And that's correct, but he's going to have to count on a strong finish here this evening in order to survive March 31st. That's the key goal here, is to become a top two finisher. Otherwise, your chances of winning the Senate are over. So that's, this is a do-or-die moment for the Byrne campaign, for Sessions, and for Tuberville. Right now, though, the early indications are that Tuberville is looking good. He's pulling strong. That's political nose-ice. I mean, well-known throughout the state is the head football coach for Auburn University, but so far tonight, a lot of Republicans are putting their faith in him.
Yeah, three top vote getters, though. Whichever ones don't win, they don't have a job waiting on them.
Yeah, that's correct. And we're going to have a runoff, so that's all indications of what we're looking at here. So we're looking at Tuberville Sessions right now as we're observing this right now. Again, I'm at the Sessions watch party. It's kind of fairly quiet for the most part. I mean, people are still are starting to file in, but there's been more media here most of the day than there's been people at the actual rally.
Because media are not people. Media are not people. We know that. Y'all are robots, right? Or I guess I am too.
I'm sitting right next to the incomparable Bob Grip, by the way. So you'd be nice over there.
make sure that he knows I said hello as we all watch
Will
for the master of the Rolodex, Bob Grip, who is amazing when it comes to getting information out on an election. Let's talk about the Senate race is tight. What about AL1? Those that want to replace Bradley Byrne. This is something that has a runoff written all over it too.
Yeah, that's correct. And again, not a huge surprise at the moment. Kind of going into this thing, we thought it'd be a race amongst three contenders: Jerry Carl, Bill Hightower, and Chris Pringle. It's kind of shaping up as I anticipated, with Carl and Hightower in the lead. That's kind of what the polling had indicated.
But it's flipped too, John, right? I mean, you just talked about, yes, it's Sessions, Tuberville in the Senate right now, but it's flipped with Tuberville holding the advantage over Sessions. And in this case, we all seen a bunch of polling, some polling, that said Hightower had the lead over Carl, but right now we see Carl with the lead over Hightower.
That's correct. And again, the numbers I'm looking at here are very early, so I don't want to say how this might, you don't know what precincts have been counted, which ones haven't. A lot to be determined here this evening to jump to any conclusion. But Jerry Carl has spent a lot on advertising going into this campaign. Some might say it's been effective advertising. And it's been played out a lot, and we'll just see if that matters. He's, again, spent a lot of money so far, he's given a good showing so far tonight.
Yeah, there's different kind of political ads out there, and we've seen them in this session. Let's talk about this, or in this campaign. In AL1, yes, Jerry Carl has done a lot of advertising, and it's been of positive or talking about he, the candidate, why he's better. And there's not been the fighting between the different candidates at this point. We'll see what happens in the runoff. But I got to say that out of the ads that would get attention out there in AL1, Kris Pringle probably takes that award, right? I mean, he had the edgier of the ads.
Oh yeah, certainly so, and it indicated a, you know, trying to get name recognition out there towards the end when you see those type of ads, and yeah, they were edgier, you know, kind of bringing up Nancy Pelosi and they were, you know, tried to be a little humorous too.
They're the ads people remember, whether they like them or they, people remember those ads.
Yeah, they're memorable, and but are they going to be enough for him to make a runoff? Again, time will tell. Right now, he's trailing distant third place, and so we'll see. We'll see how this shakes out. You know, Jerry Carl, I'm looking at some numbers right now, indicates where he's at 46%. So,
could he wait a second? Do you think? Well, I know you won't. This is because John's a journalist, and I'm not. So I'm going to say, wow, Jerry Carl may avoid a runoff in this.
I'm not going to say that because it's way too early. And you got five candidates. You got flip votes all around the table. But that would be astonishing and would be a story, I would say.
What about the numbers? Now we have, I think, 12% of precincts reporting on the Amendment 1. Right now, I know things can change, but right now it is slam dunk city for no. 75% no.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. I think if you talk to historians in Alabama, they'll say that, you know, an amendment like that is a tough one to really hone in and get a victory. You know, you're asking the voters to take, you know, essentially, you know, the no campaign was very effective. I mean, they basically told the voters, if you vote for this, you'd be voting for your right to take away your right to vote. And so, you know, I'm not surprised, knowing this state, that probably rubbed a lot of voters the wrong way, and didn't really see too much campaign on the other end, other side of things. But
it happened. It did. I watched it, but it seemed to come late, John. And that was, you know, the opinion pieces from API. Todd Stacey, I know, was talking about, and he was a yes vote too, and he talked about the people in the business community that were behind it as well. But it wasn't, if that was their push, it was not well thought out because they came in so late with that.
That's correct. The no vote, the no campaign was, they were effective all along. You know, it's a very simplistic message too that resonates, and it resonated early. And once it attaches on the folks, it's hard to try and remove that. And I could sense that a while back. You know, this is a very effective, quick hit type of message that, you know, here, if you vote for this, they're going to take your right to vote away. I mean, that's a pretty tough one to come back and say, well, this is why we want to do this. It's very difficult to come back and try and sell it another direction. So, at any rate, I'm not surprised by that result. Again, I'm sure the evening's early, but we'll, you know, that one I have a feeling is going to be called fairly early this evening.
All right, we'll be checking back with you soon and watching you over on Twitter. People want to follow you there. How do they do it?
Yeah, I'm at JohnSharp99. And again, you know, we're not expecting Jeff Sessions really to speak until about 10 p.m. this evening. So it's going to be a late evening.
Can you tell the people there that some of us have bedtimes that are earlier and to get things...
not on election night. That's not the way it rolls.
That's for sure, man. We appreciate your time. Tell Bob we said hello, and we'll talk to you again this evening.
All right, Sean.
All right, John Sharp checking in from the Sessions Watch Party.
And we do have at least one race called in Alabama, and that would be the Republican nomination in District 5. Mo Brooks officially wins
the Republican nomination. Did it give you that?
I don't have the numbers for you right now, but the AP called that about 8 minutes ago. And during your talk with John Sharp, two more states go towards Biden's favor. Minnesota and Arkansas called for Joe Biden.
Big night for Biden. Right, 8:58 FM Talk 106.5. Coming back, more updates after the top of the hour news, and we'll talk to you as well. Text line, phone line open for you this evening, 343-0106.